All right, we'll get started with the message. Have you ever worked with somebody like this, a made-up person named Ned? So you arrive to work, you make your way to your desk, intentionally avoiding Ned's desk. Despite your best efforts, Ned catches you. Not surprisingly, the first thing Ned starts talking about is the traffic, the terrible traffic on the way to work and how he was late because of the traffic. And of course, traffic is bad and is only getting worse all the time. Now, of course, Ned knows the reason for the bad traffic. First of all, it's the rainy weather. It's been raining every day. It's probably going to rain every day the rest of the week. Ned's weekend plans, he explains how they're probably going to be ruined by the awful weather. But of course, the real problem is the government. The government doesn't care about the traffic. They're not trying to help people out. They're not even smart enough to see the clear solution, which Ned seems to know. Besides that, they're probably being bribed by the gas companies. After going on about the weather, the traffic, and the government, Ned pauses, and he says, "Hey, what are you going to be doing today? What are you working on today?" But before you get a chance to answer that, Ned jumps in and starts complaining again. This time it's about management and the company. Some way, somehow, you manage to break away from the conversation and get to work. But all morning, as you are working, you're wondering, how am I going to avoid Ned for the rest of the day? So, of course, hopefully you don't have to work with somebody like that, but if you do, it can be kind of painful. So I'm going to share a quote. I'm going to be quoting from a few different articles throughout the message. This is the first one. The title of this article is How and Why You Should Stop Complaining, written by Elizabeth Scott. This says, "Complaining is a natural part of human communications. It's probably not realistic to decide to never complain again." And it goes on saying, "Complaining is human nature." So when I see that quote, it kind of strikes and stands out to me that complaining is probably not a good thing to do. If it's part of human nature, it's probably a good clue that that's something we should be avoiding. So let's actually, though, jump into the Bible. You won't be surprised by this passage, but go ahead and turn to Philippians chapter 2, and we'll read Philippians 2, verses 14 and 15. So again, we have a clue from this quote from the article that complaining is a problem that we should be avoiding just because it's tied to human behavior. And if it's a natural thing that humans do, it's probably something we have to change about our nature. But let's get the direct command from the Bible. Here it says, "Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation among whom you shine as lights in the world." This word complaining in other translations sometimes shows up as grumbling, murmuring, or kvetching. Have any of you kvetched lately? Not sure that I've ever kvetched intentionally. But kvetching is a good word in that it's not just complaining, it's habitually complaining. That's how this verse is translated in some various other verses. And here we can see that we are to be shining as lights in the world, and to do that, we should be doing things that are not naturally part of our human nature. And that would be, in this particular case, not complaining. So that's the subject of today's message, is do not complain. Now, I do have a title for this message, but I'm not going to share that until the very end. But you can make up your own title. It's pretty obvious. But as we go through here, we're going to explore complaining. I'm going to talk about what is complaining, what do we complain about, who complains. We'll get into why we complain, and then try to cover some of the ways that we can avoid complaining or even help others to avoid complaining. So we'll start with the question of what is complaining. Probably obvious, and you know this, but let's spend a minute or so on this. So what is complaining? One way to look at complaining is it's expressing dissatisfaction or annoyance. So some synonyms of complaining, we've covered those a little bit already, but some other synonyms of complaining are bellyache, carp, caterwaul, gripe, grumble, kvetch, I just say that just a second time, moan, murmur, and whine. Those are some of the synonyms of complaining. Complaining is often talking about things that we feel powerless over, and we don't really expect to change. The weather, of course, is a top area of complaining. Other areas might be rising prices, government, other drivers. Have any of you complained about other drivers before? How about this? Other people's children? The DMV or customer service reps? Or what about complaining about our various aches and pains? Those are some things that we complain about. Now, what's the opposite of complaining, or something that's not complaining, maybe not the opposite, but expressing, think about this, if we're trying to understand what is complaining, let's consider what it is not. So complaining is not expressing concerns and seeking understanding or solutions. So if you're talking about a problem in a way that you're trying to understand or you're trying to seek a solution, that's probably not complaining. Whereas before we saw that complaining is talking about things that you're probably not going to change. So again, complaining is what? Complaining is expressing dissatisfaction, grievance, or discontent about something, especially with no real intent to make things better. So that's a little bit about what is complaining. So who complains? So remember the quote from the beginning. It's part of human nature. So if you're human, you might have complained before in your past. But let's look at that a little bit more. Who is complaining? So complaining is prominent among people who feel they have a low status in a situation or feel that their status is slipping. Now let's say a classic case of this is complaining done by a child who is trapped in the car's back seat on a family vacation. So in this case, the child has low status in this situation. The child is in the car seat. The child cannot move. The child cannot directly control how far the drive is, when they're going to stop. And so the child has no power or very limited power in this situation. So what does the child do? The child complains. Now this complaining, again, is if a person is in a low status or situation. So this is kind of interesting. Let's consider that. The father, if the father is driving in this case, the father is driving the car. The father is in control of when the car stops, how far the car is going to be, how far they're going to drive for the day. So in that particular case, the father is in control and is probably not going to be complaining. Because if the father feels like stopping, the father can stop. If the father wants to keep going, keeps going. So there's not going to likely be complaints in that situation. But the weekend is over, the father goes to work, and then he has a boss who is telling him to do things that he does not like to do things that don't make sense. That situation, that father moves from a high status situation into where he is in a low status situation. The father may start to complain. Think about somebody who's running a large business. Maybe a million-dollar, multi-million-dollar business, and he's the big boss. He gets on an airplane, and the head flight attendant says, sit down and buckle your seat. And, oh, by the way, we're going to be stuck on the tarmac for some period of time. So the person who was in a very high-status situation, who had control over a company, control maybe over his family, never complained, never had a reason to complain, but he's stuck on an airplane, cannot get up, and that flight attendant has higher status than him. There might be a situation where he complains. So again, whether you're a complainer or not, you have to consider the situation. Just as one more example, after church, you're probably not going to hear me complaining about the length of this sermon. That does not indicate that I'm not a complainer. That's not a good test for me. However, I may speak for 2 hours just to provide a test for all of you. If after 2 hours we meet after services and you don't complain, that's probably a good sign. You put this sermon into practice. I won't speak. I'm pretty sure I won't speak 2 hours. Let's see. But I better keep going, though. So again, a key test as to whether you are a complainer or not is to be in a situation where you're not in control, things are not going well. Then, do you complain or not? That's a good case or good situation to know whether you have a problem with complaining. So So what is it? Who or what do people complain about? So here's a few things that people complain about. Well, starting with, people complain about things. People may complain about the weather. That's a thing. We're probably not going to hurt the weather's feelings by complaining about it. I don't know. I doubt it. Plants can hear. Does the weather have feelings? Not sure. Probably not. This room. We could complain about this room. Oh, it's too big. We could complain about the chair being too hard, too soft, too something. Those are things that we complain about. We may complain about ourselves. We may complain about our aches and pains. We may complain about people in power. That almost seems like a constitutional right that we have in the United States to complain about government officials, senators, presidents, judges. We complain about people in power. We complain about people we are interacting with who are strangers, people we don't know. And of course, we might complain about people we do know. We might complain about friends, relatives, fellow Christians. So amongst these categories, which ones are okay to complain about? Can we complain about any one of these? Again, we're not going to hurt the weather's feelings by complaining about it. Is that okay? Well, I'm not sure. We're going to look into this a little bit more and think about that. What about people in power? Even the head of whatever government you want to complain about is a child of God, is loved by God. Do we have a right to complain about one of God's children? What about strangers we're interacting with? Surely that's okay. We're never going to see that person again. What if you do? What if that person happened to walk into church after you have a bad interaction with that person? Something to think about. And of course, we know better than to complain about friends, relatives, and other church members, right? All right, now let's get into the next thing. Why do we complain? Well, obviously, we complain because people aren't doing things the way I know they should be done. Easy answer, right? Let's look into this. Why do we complain? So personality may be one reason. So research suggests, or at least what I had read, suggests that certain personality traits cause some people to complain more frequently. That seems fair. Some people seem a little more optimistic. Some people we might call pessimistic, although they might say they're more realistic. But there are certain personality types that may make sense as a reason why some people complain more than others. I don't think that's an excuse necessarily. That just may be an area that somebody has to work on. But personality may play into that. Again, cannot use that as an excuse to say, well, I'm just of that personality type, so it's okay that I complain. But it may be just a bigger challenge for some people than others. Habit. We may complain just out of habit. Somebody's always causing you trouble. The government's regularly messing up. The weather is never perfect. You can always find something wrong with how we look or how we feel. Is complaining just a habit? Is it part of your natural communication? That could be it. Just how you talk just might be in a complaining way. And you may not realize it, but maybe it's a habit that you've developed over time. That might be a reason why you complain. Maybe you don't even really care so much about the rainy weather, but it's just something you say. Another reason we might complain is it's a bit of communion. We're all in this together. Being around people who tend to complain a lot may make you complain along with them. And it's a way to do some form of social bonding. If we're all complaining about the same government official, we kind of feel like we're coming together and we have a common thing. And there's, I can see some reason and some benefits to doing that, but is that the right way we should be bonding? We do need to be bonding together. Are we bonding around complaining, though? Is that really the right thing to do? Paul wrote that the perfect bond is love. That's what should be drawing us together. Love and complaining don't seem to be a close match. So we should be bonding together and try to be bonding more on love rather than complaining. Mood. We may complain because we're in a bad mood. If you're in a bad mood, you're probably going to complain more, or at least you'll be more susceptible to complaining. Now, this may create a bit of a vicious cycle. If you start in a bad mood, Then you start complaining about things, and that reminds you of all the other things that are going wrong that don't seem quite right. So then you complain more, and your mood gets worse, and you just keep going. But being in a bad mood about one thing may cause you to complain about other things. So the next reason I had in terms of why we complain, this was a bit of an interesting one. It's emotional regulation or venting. So some bad things happen, you have these feelings pent up inside and you just feel like you need to let them out. So venting is a common form of complaining. And it does bring some validation, especially if you complain to somebody else and they say, yeah, you're right, I have that same problem, or you're right, you kind of feel better. And it can make you feel better. But you have to be careful with this one. So what is the purpose? Why are you venting? Are you just venting because you're mad? Or are you venting because you're looking for a solution? Again, the difference between what is complaining and what is not complaining. Quoting from the same article, how and why you should stop complaining, says, while venting emotions is sometimes seen as a way to achieve catharsis, evidence shows that it makes negative emotions even worse in many cases. This holds true for online settings. Posting a negative review or rant might make you feel better momentarily, but studies show that focusing on these negative emotions worsens mood. Rather than releasing emotions, it tends to amplify them. So we're going to come back to this as we go along through here and spend a little bit more time on this, but there is something there. And when I was thinking about this, I thought about the Psalms. And it seems like David and the other writers, sometimes they kind of vented. And let's look at a couple cases where it looks like they did. So we're going to start with Psalms chapter 22 and read verses 1 and 2. So when we are in an emotionally difficult spot, talking about what's going on, especially talking to God about what we're feeling and what is going on in our lives, is a good thing. Psalms chapter 22, Psalm 22, verses 1 and 2. Here it says, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from helping me? And from the words of my groaning, oh my God, I cry in the daytime, but you do not hear. And in the night season, am I not silent? Let's look at another psalm here. Psalm 77, Psalm 77, verses 1 through 3. Here it says, I cried out to God with my voice, and he gave ear to me. In the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. My hand was stretched out in the night without ceasing. My soul refused to be comforted. I remembered God and I was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. So here are the writers of the Psalms. We're in difficult situations at times, just like us. And they did go to God. And at least the word complaint is used here, complaining was used here. So it's not that we shouldn't have some emotional venting in the right way. And we're going to come back to this in the solutions section. And we're going to look at another Psalms later, to see how we start maybe in a complaining way, but we finish, at least in the example, we finish in a very positive way. So again, some more reasons why people complain. This one's interesting. People complain to avoid responsibility and excuse poor performance. So if you're complaining about a task that is given to you, and you talk about how impossible this is and how ridiculous it was for you to be given the task and how you don't have all the right things you need to get it done, and you start complaining like that, and then when you don't get the task done, of course, it wasn't your fault. You don't have that responsibility to figure it out and get it done. So if you present it and complain about it in a way that it's impossible to get done, then you don't complete it, you just kind of won. It's a clever brain trick. Another article, The Three Biggest Reasons Why People Complain by Ed Lattimore, it says, if complaining is a symptom, irresponsibility is the virus. Once infected, the host is likely to blame everyone and everything for their problems except themselves. So again, this, the the reason for the complaint in this case is you're just being irresponsible in this case. I played basketball at Winter Family Weekend, and I'm still recovering. And as I played, I was kind of puzzled. There were a number of times where the referee would call a foul for the other team against me or my team, and I thought, wow, okay. And then I would feel like would kind of make a similar play, and the referee would not call the foul on me or for me in my favor. And I was like, wow, that's kind of weird. What's going on here? And now I could, and I didn't play very well. I wasn't happy with how I played. So I could easily say, it's the ref's fault. They're the reason I didn't play very well. Now, it had nothing to do with the fact that I'm slow, that I can't jump, and that I'm out of practice. I mean, surely those are not the reasons I did not play very well, right? But this is where I could avoid responsibility for not being in better shape, for not being in better practice, by blaming the refs. Similarly, students who get poor marks may complain about a bad teacher. It's the teacher's fault. And maybe in some cases it is, I don't know, but if that's your approach, maybe you need a different approach. Or an employee, again, might be complaining about deadlines because their coworkers didn't get things done. Let's look at John 6 and verse 41, thinking about where one of the reasons for complaining may be about a lack of responsibility. John 6, verse 41. And we'll read this verse, and then we'll drop down and read verse 60. So John 6, 41 says, "Then the Jews complained about him because he said, 'I am the bread with which came down from heaven.'" And then we'll drop down to verse 60. It says, "Therefore, many of his disciples, when they heard this, said, 'This is hard, a hard saying, who can understand it?'" So here in this case, these followers of Jesus at that time were hearing things that were really hard. And what did they do? They didn't take personal responsibility and say, "I need to learn and I need to understand, I need to grow." They complained. That was their reaction. They didn't want the responsibility that God was putting out there, that Jesus was putting out there. And so they complained. Now they had probably a reason for complaining. You can drop down a couple verses and read verse 44. Maybe they were not being called at that time, but they had a personal responsibility to understand, and they didn't like it, and they complained about it. So again, we may complain because of irresponsibility. Next, in terms of why we might complain, ego reinforcement, maybe to get attention, to brag, or to feel more powerful. Let's look at Jude chapter 1 and verse 16. So don't mistakenly turn to Jude chapter 2. Jude 1:16. This says, "These are grumblers, complainers, walking according to their own lusts, and they mouth great swelling words, flattering people to gain advantage." So Jude is writing about people who are walking according to their own lusts. And what are they doing? They're grumbling, they're complaining. Now, much of what people do is about reinforcing themselves. And one way you can do that is what? By judging others and by talking about mistakes of other people or by complaining about the mistakes of other people. So when we are criticizing somebody, it's almost like saying we would do a better job. And maybe sometimes you would, but criticizing a government leader or official for stupid decisions, we got to be careful there. Are you doing that because you're looking down on that person? Are you doing that because you're building yourself up? Are you doing that as a way to brag, as a way to put yourself above the other person? This is where complaining about others is a bit of an ego reinforcement. I've heard some people say this before, things like, "Well, that was a pretty good message, but I would have done this differently," or, "He said that part, and that didn't really make sense." And probably I heard myself saying that at times. I hope not too often. But you're criticizing a message as if, "Well, it's pretty good, but I would have done better." I mean, you're not saying that directly, but that's kind of what you're saying. And I would say on this point, as a young adult, maybe even a teenager, you're probably more likely to do some of these things. You think you're wiser than you really are, maybe. I don't think there are any 20-year-olds in the room at the moment. I don't think 20, 21, Madison's not here, so I'll pick on that group of, in that age range. Let's look at Luke chapter 5 and verse 30. Again, thinking about how we might complain because we're trying to reinforce our ego, trying to feel more powerful than we really are or where we should be. This is about the scribes and the Pharisees complaining about Jesus. Luke 5, verse 30. This says, "And their scribes and the Pharisees complained against his disciples, saying, 'Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?'" In at least two other places in Luke, it talks about the Pharisees and scribes. They're recorded as complaining about Jesus spending time with the sinners. So were these Pharisees and scribes, did they feel like they were losing their place? Were they slipping in their status? And so what did they do? They turned to complaining. They wanted to build themselves up. They were worried about the power that Jesus seemed to have over the crowds. And so they started picking on things that he did and complaining about things that he did. Since we're in Luke, let's look at Luke chapter 10 and look at verses 38 through 42. I don't think this example lines up perfectly well, but I think there's some, I think it works a little bit. This is a famous story about Mary and Martha and serving Jesus. So Luke chapter 10, starting in verse 38, it said, "Now it happened as they went and he entered a certain village, a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. She had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me.' And Jesus answered and said to her, 'Martha, Martha, are you worried and troubled about many things, but one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her.'" So here Martha thought she was doing the right thing. She thought, wow, I'm serving, I'm preparing a meal, I'm doing the right thing. And she went to Jesus complaining about her sister. Now, she may have been doing that because she wanted help, and Mary was not helping, but maybe also there's something in there that she wanted to highlight to Jesus, that she was doing what she thought was the right thing. So again, we may be complaining as a way to build ourselves up or to brag about ourselves. Another reason could be that maybe there's an underlying problem that makes you unhappy. So if there's a problem in your life, you may be more likely to complain about other things. I think this ties into what I'd said before earlier about mood, if you're in a bad mood. So if you're having a problem, maybe you're going to be complaining about other things. I worked with a guy a number of years ago. I didn't work very closely with him. I didn't really know him, but he had a bit of a reputation as not being the most pleasant person to work with. And it seemed like he complained a lot about things. And in talking with a few people that worked with him more closely, we probably complained about his complaining. So we were probably all thrown in together as complainers. But it came out a little bit later. Somebody mentioned, oh, by the way, he just got through a really bad divorce. Maybe that explains some of his complaining. Not that it was okay to be complaining, but certainly if somebody's going through a very difficult part of their life, it's a great opportunity to show mercy and kindness and be graceful to that person. And hopefully, I don't know for sure, but maybe after things got taken care of, he was a little bit less of a complainer. And then a final reason I'll mention in terms of why we complain. Why do we complain? We may complain because of ingratitude. So I'll quote again from the three biggest reasons why people complain. Step back and think through the following scenario. A person stands in line at a coffee shop. The line is long and slow. They complain to the customer standing behind them. They just want to get home and relax. "I can't believe this line. Don't they know we have places to be? I could be watching my show right now. The other customer had just lost his job. He was getting coffee to kill time before he heads home to tell his wife the bad news. He was agonizing over how she will take it and how they'll feed their children next month. He may not have said it out loud, but the despairing man listened to the complainer and was thinking, "That's all you're dealing with? I wish I had your problems." This category of why people complain fits very well with the ancient Israelites. We certainly can't have a sermon or message on complaining without mentioning the ancient Israelites. They have to be the most famous for their complaining. They had many things to be grateful for, and yet they quickly forgot these things. They became ungrateful, and then they complained. So again, the Israelites were most famous. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 10, we'll mention this passage, and then we'll go back to the Old Testament in Numbers. But 1 Corinthians 10:10, just a short passage breaking in, "Nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer." The Israelites' complaining was so bad that many of them were destroyed, and it was so bad that Paul used them as an example for us to learn from and to grow from. Let's look at Numbers chapter 14. Verses 27 through 29, we'll read about their complaining. Numbers 14, 27. "How long shall I bear with this evil congregation who complain against me? I have heard complaints which the children of Israel make against me. Say to them, 'As I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. The carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in the wilderness, all of you who were numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above.'" God takes complaining very seriously. He tells us not to do it. He shows examples of what happens when people do complain. And one of the reasons why the Israelites complained was because they were ungrateful. So we're going to start to transition in this message on from why not, transition from kind of the what is complaining, why we complain, who complains, and we're going to start talking about why we shouldn't complain and how to not complain. So when I think about the Israelites and their complaining, there's a couple of thoughts that I have. One is, well, obviously, they shouldn't have done it. They were wrong. It's easy for us to read the pages of the Bible, to read through the book of Exodus and say, wow, look at this amazing thing that just happened, all of these miracles that just happened. And a couple pages later, the Israelites are complaining. And for us, we flip a page from one thing to the other. We can see both of them. Why would they complain? Well, certainly it was wrong. But we should maybe be a little bit more slow to think about what they went through and how maybe it wasn't quite so easy to not be a complainer, and are there some lessons that we can learn by thinking about it? Now, these people did not have God's Holy Spirit. That's some huge advantage that we have to help us avoid. Of course, that just raises the bar for in the expectations that we have. But what they were going through must not have been easy. They were carrying everything they owned around a desert. They went days without water. They didn't have food, it seems like, at times. I mean, yes, there was an amazing miracle, but if you go 3 days maybe without water, you're kind of thirsty. So when we look at their example, we should, of course, learn not to complain, but think through it a little bit more. How would we have not complained if we were in their situation? So let's look at this. What's the big deal about complaining, and why should we stop? Why should we worry about stopping the complaining? Certainly the Bible tells us not to complain. We just read a couple verses where it says that complaining led to people being destroyed. But why is complaining bad? Well, complaining may drive people apart. We talked a little bit about how sometimes complaining does bring people together, but it may drive people apart. When somebody's viewed as a chronic complainer, you're going to not want to engage. do you really want to be around somebody who's a constant complainer? Remember our made-up Ned, somebody that you want to avoid. So again, complaining chronically may drive people apart as opposed to bringing people together. A couple verses on this point. Let's look at 1 Peter 4, verse 9. 1 Peter 4, verse 9. This says, be hospitable to one another without grumbling. We should be building bonds based on love and bringing people together. And if we're complaining, we're not being hospitable. And then just a page or two over in your Bible, James 5, verse 9, a few pages later. James 5, verse 9, reading from the NIV, James 5, 9 says, do not grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. So again, why should we not be complaining? Because it drives people apart. And if there are times when it's pulling people together for the wrong reasons. Again, why not complain? What's the big deal about it? As we talked about it, it may be a sign of irresponsibility. Complaining may show a lack of maturity. It may be a sign of ingratitude. And it may be a sign of pride. So we should be avoiding complaining so that we are avoiding things like pride, ingratitude, immaturity, irresponsibility, and driving people apart. Now, before we go further, I want to talk a minute or so about complaint versus complaining. If you take complain and add a T at the end, maybe we get something a little different. When you're raising up an issue, when you're talking about something that's wrong, are you trying to make it better? Again, going back to the article, How and Why You Should Stop Complaining, quoting, it says, in a study published for the Journal of Social Psychology, researchers found that when people complain in order to achieve a certain result, they are happier than people who complain simply for the sake of complaining. If there are problems, it may be very appropriate, it may even be your responsibility to bring those problems up, to get to a solution, or to get to a better understanding. So maybe you see something as a problem, but if you understood it, maybe from other points of view and other perspectives, you would see that it was actually a good thing that was happening. So if you bring these things up properly, respectfully, as a way to understand better, or as a way to help make things better, that's a good thing. Acts chapter 6 talks about a problem that the early church had, and that led to the creation of the position of a deacon. In Micah, the Lord raised complaints about the people. God complained about the people because he wanted to show what they were doing wrong so that they would have a chance to do better. In Psalms, it writes about pouring out your complaint to God. So if traffic is making you late, complaining about it is probably not worth your energy because you're not going to do anything about traffic. At least most of you aren't. I'm not going to. Maybe there are a few people who might have influence on that. If you do, that's a different story. But most of us cannot influence the traffic situation. So spending time complaining about the traffic may not be worth it. But if you're in a situation where you are late, often for appointments because of your spouse, that might be an area, very carefully, to bring up as a complaint, because this is an opportunity to maybe make things better. So it may be appropriate or helpful to bring up a complaint to your spouse saying, look, we're always late. We should be doing better and work on it. Again, be very careful on this. Part of the reason I mention this is because as I was reading through some of these articles on complaining, it mentioned something that I had never, before 2 months ago, I'd never heard of in my life, but I'd heard it in two different contexts in the last month or so, and I thought that was interesting, so I wanted to share it with you. The article I was reading talked about a complaint sandwich. Have any of you heard of a complaint sandwich? One, two, good. Before 2 months ago, I'd never heard of this. So what is a complaint sin? Which at least a couple of you know. But basically, it's a grievance that is sandwiched between two positive statements. So one way to try to help to make progress on a problem where you want maybe somebody to do things a little differently is you start with a first slice of a positive statement, kind of help to avoid your spouse, in this case, to becoming defensive. So you start with something positive. Then the next layer, the middle layer, is the complaint. And it should be specific and simple and not listing all the times that you were late in the past, but just be very simple, specific, and stay calm and focused on the current situation. And then the final slice of this complaint sandwich is another positive statement, maybe something that would help as a motivation, a positive statement that conveys some message of togetherness. But however you do, whether you use a complaint sandwich or not, whatever approach, sometimes a complaint is a helpful thing to do, and it's not complaining. Again, the key is, are you trying to gain understanding? Are you trying to help solve a problem? Those things may be very appropriate. So how do you know if you're complaining too much? So what are some signs of complaining too much? So one thing to think about is if you're saying something about someone else, whether it's someone you know or someone you don't know, if that person heard you, heard what you were saying, are you okay with that? This can be applied in many different ways, but it can be applied to complaining. Is it okay that they just heard you say something? That's one way to kind of measure whether you're complaining or not. Again, complaining, if you're airing negativity without trying to find a solution, that may be a sign of you complaining too much. If when you talk about the problems, it makes you feel worse, it makes you feel more powerless and more helpless, maybe that's a complaint that you need to either change your approach or stop altogether. If you're often bringing up past events, maybe that's a sign you're complaining too much. If you become irritable or anxious after complaining, that's probably a sign that you're complaining or you're complaining too much. If you just have an overall negative mood or negative outlook on life, that may be an indicator that you are a complainer. If you want to know if you're complaining, one idea is to evaluate your communications. Think about, reflect on conversations you had throughout the day. Review some of your text messages or instant messages or emails. Is there an overall negative theme about these things? That's a good way to help measure whether you're complaining too much. And of course, measure your words against what the Bible says, especially verses like Philippians 4, verse 8. That's focused on meditation, but certainly what we meditate on is probably what we're talking about. So is there a gap between your conversations and what we're told to be thinking about? That will help you tell if you're complaining too much or not. So now let's consider, how can we help ourselves or even potentially help others in terms of complaining? What can we do about it? If we are complaining or complaining too much, what can we do if we're around somebody who may be complaining? So first of all, you might need to admit there is a problem, just like anything like this. 12 steps, I don't have 12 steps, I don't think. I didn't number them, but admit there's a problem. And we spent time just thinking about what is complaining to help kind of think about, well, am I complaining or not? Do I have a problem? And then break the habit. So a lot of these ways to stop complaining or reduce your complaining are just kind of follow-ons for why we complain, why do we complain, what's the solution? So breaking the habit. Are you this person or do you know this person who says things like this? If it's not one thing or another, same song, different verse. One step forward, two steps back. When it rains, it pours. I can't catch a break. If it weren't for bad luck, I'd have no luck at all. I'm always on the losing end. Trucks break down, dogs run off, politicians lie. Sigh. takes only one hand to count on all the things that I can count on in my life. Are you that person? I had a neighbor when I was pretty young, between probably ages of, 4 or 5 till 9 or so. She was an elderly lady. Well, when I was 4 or 5, she was elderly. I don't know what she really was. She was probably 32. I don't know. Anyway, she was a senior citizen, I think that's fair to say, and she probably had a hard life, but she used this phrase, if it isn't one thing, it's another. She said that frequently, often. She also doodled in her telephone book. I would be at her house at times, and her telephone books were very nicely decorated, back when we had telephone books. I know you young people don't know anything about telephone books. I'll show you one day in a museum. Anyway, maybe complaining is just a habit. So figure out how to break that habit. Again, consider maybe there's a problem in your life that needs to be solved, and that's causing you to complain about many different things. As an overly simple example, if you have a bad job, work to change that job. If you can do that, and if you can solve that problem, if you can get into a better job, so many things will be better. They're exactly the same, but they'll seem better, potentially. The sports team that you root for maybe won't be quite as bad as it seems. The weather won't always be bad. The traffic, at least occasionally, won't be terrible if you solve that fundamental problem that's putting you into a bad spot. And closely following on to that is improve your mood. Work to improve your mood. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 16. Now, we know the shortest verse in the Bible is either he wept or Jesus wept. Now, in terms of number of letters, that seems true, but 1 Thessalonians 5, 16 is a two-word verse as well, at least in some translations, I think. It says, rejoice always. So our mood as Christians should be like way up here as a baseline. You know, maybe if we're not Christians, if we're in the world, if we're before we were converted, our baseline mood was somewhere down here. As a Christian, our baseline mood should be up here in a rejoicing way. That's not to say that we don't dip down at times. That's not to say that there aren't sad times. There's not to say that there aren't times of crying and sorrow and pain and suffering. But our overall baseline should be in a way that we are full of joy and rejoicing always. If we can maintain and be in that spot, our complaining is likely to be less. How about this? Put some time between the event that you might complain about and when you start to complain. And you may realize that complaining is just not worth it. Think back, 2 years ago, 7 months, 6 days, 3 hours and 22 minutes ago, I went through the Carl's Jr. drive-thru, ordered a cheeseburger with no pickles, and wouldn't you know it, it came with pickles. I am so angry about that. That ruined my life practically. Does it matter? At the moment, okay, maybe we're a little too upset. Maybe we're having a bad day, and that was just the next thing that happened, a cheeseburger with pickles. Put some time between the bad event and maybe when you start complaining. Maybe you'll find it's just not worth it. Try some replacement therapy. Now, I want to be careful with that statement. I don't know. I may be saying something I don't even intend to mean, but what I'm thinking about is replace your complaints with positive statements. Try to say something positive rather than something negative. Let's look at Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29. Two verses here on this point. Again, focus on the positive things, and there won't be time to complain. Ephesians 4:29 from the NIV, it says, do not let unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. So again, we should be saying things that build others up. Another verse, Proverbs chapter 16, verse 24. I like the wording in this. Solomon wrote here, Proverbs chapter 16, verse 24, Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. Let's be like that. Let's have our talk like that, not be about complaining so much. And especially if you're working with someone else, you may consider to help others, help redirect either yourself or someone else. When someone's talking about some negative things, very carefully and graciously, think about it and maybe try to steer the conversation. Ask somebody things like, what was the best thing that happened to you this week? Now, you may find somebody's response was, well, the best thing that happened to me was, I don't know, some negative thing, because everything's negative. You may walk into that, but that's just a way that you can kind of think about it. It's like sitting around talking with a group of people. Challenge people and say, what are three good things that happened to you today or this week? Try to change the conversation. Try to help reflect a conversation that's more positive and less negative. Again, I'd be careful with this. Don't be argumentative and counter everything that someone says. If you're trying to help somebody to bring them out, don't cause more of a problem. If they start by saying, oh, the weather's bad and it's too cold, don't say, well, at least it's not too hot. Traffic was terrible. Well, at least you had more time to meditate on your way to work. I have a horrible job. Well, at least you have a job. My back hurts. Well, at least you can walk. Okay, use that wisely, but you can help this. Again, challenge people to say some positive things and help bring the mood of the conversation up and be more positive and less negative. Then I'm coming back to this idea of venting or complaining. So again, many of the Psalms, David and other writers, started Psalms, and it seemed like they were complaining and venting. They had some really tough emotions that they were dealing with. But what happened in these Psalms? Let's look at Psalms chapter 13. So I think it's about, six verses. We're going to read through this, and I think this shows a really good example of a difficult starting point, a very challenging time. But let's look at where it ends at the end of the Psalms. So Psalms chapter 13. How long, O Lord, will you forgive me? How long will you hide your face from me? How long shall I take counsel in my soul, having sorrow in my heart daily? How long will my enemy be exalted over me? Consider and hear me, O Lord my God. Enlighten my eyes, lest I sleep the sleep of death, lest my enemy say, I have prevailed against him. Lest those who trouble me rejoice when I am moved. But I have trusted in your mercy. My heart shall rejoice in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord because he has dealt bountifully with me. So at the beginning of this short psalm, David is saying, I have sorrow in my heart daily. He was down. But by verse 5 and 6, he has changed the wording. He says his heart will rejoice, and he recognizes that he's going to sing to the Lord because God has dealt bountifully with me. So David starts in more of a bad or even complaining mood, and then he works through, and he explains his problems to God. Then he looks to God for the solution. He says, God, you're enlightening my eyes. He said, I am trusting in your mercy. And when David does those things, when he realizes he needs to be doing those things, when he realizes God is there and God is mercifully dealing with him, his attitude starts to change. He starts to think about the future. He says, I will rejoice in the salvation that's going to come. He knows that God is dealing with him bountifully. So if we are in a bad spot, if we are emotionally stressed or physically stressed, we should take those problems to God and to our friends and family as well. Talk through them, but work through this as a solution. Don't just stop with the complaining. Don't just stop with, here's the problem, all is lost, I give up. Work through the solution, just like we can see in this example of Psalms chapter 13. David didn't stop at verse 2 and say, I'm sorrow in my heart every day. That wasn't the end. He kept going to a solution. So what can we do again about complaining and how to reduce it? Similar to things we've covered already, but keep things in perspective. Look at the big picture. ask yourself the question, is it really worth it, this complaining that I might be about to do? Again, reflect on things that you have complained about in the past. How important are those things really? How big of a deal was it that somebody cut you off in traffic 10 years ago while you're trying to get to the store? Is it really worth you getting upset and making yourself even more upset by the complaining? Spend more time thinking about the future. Complaining about today is kind of worthless compared to what's in store for us. I know of a man, and I think you'll recognize this person. We all know this person, but he had a great and prestigious job. But he was jerked out of this job and put into a new job where people did not like him and people were even afraid of him. This man, throughout his life, was literally beaten multiple times. He was left for dead at least once. He was shipwrecked and had to swim for his life. He was unfairly imprisoned for years and finally executed unjustly. If anyone deserved to complain, he would be at the front of the line. Of course, I'm speaking of Paul. Let's look at 2 Corinthians chapter 11, and we'll read a few verses from this chapter and also from chapter 12. And we'll start 2 Corinthians 11, 24 through 27. We'll start there. From the Jews, five times I received 40 stripes minus one. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I was shipwrecked. A day and a night I have been in the deep. In journeys often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils in the cities, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among the brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and darkness. Verse 32 and 33, in Damascus the government under Artius the king was guarding the city of Damascus with a garrison desiring to arrest me, but I was let down through a basket and escaped from his hands. Moving on to chapter 12, looking at verse 7, 2 Corinthians 12, 7, and lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of revelation, a thorn in my flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. And then let's come to verse 10. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Paul had a lot to complain about, but he maintained a very positive attitude. He was looking forward to what he knew was coming. 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 9. What was Paul's focus? What kept him going despite all of these bad things happening to him? 1 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 9. Here he writes, but as it is written, eye has not seen nor ear heard, nor has entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. Is it really worth complaining? Another way to avoid complaining or reduce the amount of complaining is to count your blessings. Remind yourself of all the things that you have so that when something isn't going right, you know things that have been going right and you can say, well, that one didn't go so good, but there are so many other things I can be thankful for. In another article that I read was very interesting. It was about the writer of the article was writing about a person named Kaia Roman. This Kaia Roman had been, I think, doing very well. She lost her job or her business. She got into a really bad state, and she became a constant complainer. But then she found a way to get out of that state, and the article is written, at least in part, about this process that she used, Kaia Roman. And here's a quote in the article from Kaia Roman. It says, when I fall asleep at night, I go through the alphabet. Now remember, this person, I didn't give you much background, but she was in a really bad spot. Many things had gone wrong for her. She was complaining, and she was in a really low spot, and she needed to do something drastic to get out of it. And this is one thing that she that she did. So again, when I fall asleep at night, I go through the alphabet. For every letter, I think of something that I'm grateful for. She said she also kept a gratitude notebook where she wrote down everything she was grateful for that day. This is one of the things, or a couple of the things, that she did to help get her out of this spot. I like the idea of a gratitude notebook. I don't know that I will ever take the time to do that, but often we take the time to have a prayer list, things that we want to be praying about, people that we are praying about. Maybe if you have time, write down some of the things, some of the blessings, some of the things you have grateful for, and review that before you pray. And that may help us to be less of a complainer. And finally, the last one that I have in terms of how we can reduce our complaining, practice humility. So stop for a moment. Imagine a humble person. This could be someone you know. This could be an imaginary person. This could be you. Do you have this person in mind? So think about this person. How frequently does this humble person complain? When someone around this humble person does something dumb, what does the humble person say? Do they point out what was dumb? Do they put down that person and say, that was really dumb, person? When things aren't working out quite right, what does this humble person say? Again, humility teaches us to put others before ourselves. When we complain, we're often putting others down, the opposite of humility. We're raising ourselves up by pointing out the wrongdoings of others or the mistakes that other people are making. But if we're practicing humility, this can help us stop complaining. All right, the title of this message is, Please Do Not Complain About This Message. Is it okay to talk about the bad weather? Is it okay to talk about our room being a little too big? Maybe. I think it depends. You know, is complaining about the weather your full-time job? Maybe that's a problem. Do you get so tired of complaining about the cold weather that you long for the summer so you can complain about the hot weather? I would say be careful. Think about this. Again, I'm not suggesting we never talk about the weather. We should. It's good. But how often should we be saying something different? How often should our sayings be helpful? So let's end where we began, not with the story about Ned, but with Philippians chapter 2 and verse 14 and 15. We'll close by considering, again, Philippians chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. Do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God, without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. So to keep some keys to put this verse into practice, consider the goal. What's the big picture? Again, we're trying to become blameless and harmless, children of God, a light to the world. Are we improving our relationships with others? With our conversations, are our words encouraging and gracious? When we consider verses like Philippians chapter 4, verse 8, how does that compare to our talk? Please do not complain about this message.